So I just recorded an episode with Leonard Pham from FinOps Squad, and it was a great one. I realized it was a great example of the power of a fractional CFO. He explained to me at the beginning of the call, yeah, we went in and we restructured some debt. And I was like, okay, that sounds cool. But then he told me the story of what that actually meant. And this business was able to leverage their existing network to have his existing customers invest in his business, free up his debt repayments, which transformed the business, allowing them to move from sort of stagnation to expansion. And now that business is expanding. It's a great story of how a fractional CFO can really have a big impact on a business. There was zero chance this business was going to do that without Leonard's help. And he's the guy who made it happen. So I really enjoyed talking to Leonard. We talked about that. We talked about the World Finance Forum that just happened in London. We talked about basketball. I really hope you enjoy this one. Hello and welcome to the Gross Profit Podcast. My name is James Kennedy. I'm the CEO and co-founder at procurementexpress.com. We take the hassle out of managing your company's spend, but we're not here to talk about that today. Instead, I've got Leonard Pham from FinOps Squad. Leonard, we're a couple of different things we're going to cover today. We're going to cover the World Finance Forum, which you see is fresh back from. And you're going to hear a bit about whether that is something that you maybe should consider going to. We're going to hear a bit about his experience as a fractional CFO. And then we're going to finish up with some heroes. So Leonard, thank you very much for coming along today. Maybe just tell us, where are you in the world, and tell us a bit about yourself.
No, thanks, James. Thanks for inviting me onto your podcast. So yeah, my name's Leonard Pham. I am the owner of Finance Operations Squad, FinOps Squad. I'm based in London, sunny South London today, but also travel quite a bit for work and to meet client needs and goals.
Right. So you're fresh back from the World Finance Forum. Maybe you just explain what that is. And there was a lot of talk I heard on the street about the new P&L. So maybe just tell us about that. What's it all about in the first place?
Yeah, so the World Finance Forum is effectively a gathering of finance professionals across the globe. The forums that happen all over the world. So they come to London, it's like a tour, basically. And it's a great time to know what's happening in the world of finance in terms of what's coming up technology-wise. So this year's theme was mainly on AI and transformation and how that's impacting the role of the finance function. It was a great venue. So it took place in St. Paul's in central London, just outside the cathedral. Really good venue. Great connection, so many good people in the room, and a great place to network and speak to individuals and understand their current challenges within their organizations, and also to bring together ideas, new ideas, and foster sort of way forward. And I had a wonderful opportunity to actually be one of the speakers on a panel. We discussed the role of CFOs on the board and how that bridges the trust gap amongst the C-suite. And so I was on stage with a couple of other experts, a few friends that I knew, and it was a really good conversation. I really loved it. I went away learning loads, and I also made it a real point. You asked about the new P&L, and that's a phrase that I coined because as I've elevated up the chain within my career, I realized that one of the most important things as a CFO is to have emotional intelligence. And so the whole aspect of being a good operator technically, but also as a person and a leader is really important. So the new P&L stands for people and leadership. So you need to be really good with people so that you can manage the various egos on the board. You can manage your teams below you, and you can manage the external sort of pressures when dealing with auditors and finances and things like that. So, and then leadership, you need to set the tone, direct, motivate, and push people forward. So I always start with a new P&L, and so people over profits puts you into a good standing as a leader.
Very good. Okay, so I'm curious here. You said a couple of things which I'm interested in. One is this trust gap between the board and the team. I suppose that's been the first time I've kind of heard that phraseology. What were people saying about that? This is this awkward position that sometimes the finance leader is in, where they're on both sides of the fence in a way, and building trust on both sides of the fence is tricky. What was the panel's takeaway?
It was really good, because that was probably the biggest question. You know, what is it? And it's because within large entities and even small entities, you can have silos at leadership level, and people are scared to get it wrong, you know, and so there's a lot of pressure taking place. The CFO acts as the middleman, because finance pretty much touches everywhere within the organization. Actually, it's the one function that is going to be in every function, because you need to spend money. There's going to be a level of financial oversight, whether you're in marketing, IT, the finance person sees it all. So we're in a unique position on bridging those silos together. We act as the talisman. You know, in football, you need that center mid person to sort of play defense and also attack. You know, work closely with IT, but also close to sales, close to marketing. And finance should be that conduit to bring it all together, because you'll have insights, hopefully, on most of the data that is flowing within the business and also the conversations that are taking place.
I had a learning here around this recently, which is, you know, Billy does, he works on our finance team. We've started to invite him more into the conversations about the marketing, particularly our cost of marketing and stuff like that. And he loves it. Like, actually, I don't think sometimes you think on the operations this time, you see, you know, well, the finance people are over there, help me get paid and stuff. But if you invite them into the business, so to speak, and these numbers that they see floating by, you start to have a discussion about them and really engage. Finance team gets much more out of it. You know, the operations team get much more out of it. You start to see it as a tool for change, and a tool actually is just as opposed to this reporting thing or this oversight or whatever, you know?
I agree. And this is one of the things, and I forgive me talk about FinOps Squad, but we're all about finances shouldn't be a fear. Finance should fuel businesses, you know? So it shouldn't be something that, oh no, the finance man has come around to hit us. No, he should be actually on side, our team, to help us propel us forward. And so I totally agree around that marketing, sort of the cost of acquisition, the return on investment in terms of if we do this campaign, what potentially could this mean to the top line growth, but also how can we reduce the bottom line and understand how we work closely with certain aspects of the business, so sales and marketing, to grow the business. You know, if we are raising this capital, how are we going to be deploying this money effectively to make us achieve the goals that we were out to achieve? So I totally agree. I think finance has that tender balance between pushing but also controlling as well. There is definitely that responsibility of cost control and getting that right balance, because you don't want to go all guns blazing and then you're in trouble and you have cash issues. So.
And then you mentioned as well, it was largely about AI. What was your takeaways from AI? Should we all just start retraining now, go and do something else, or maybe just go out into the woods and start learning how to cook and catch animals and berries?
Do you know, I think there's that natural fear, because I think the whole world, it's still kind of unknown. And I understand that natural fear, because it's change and it's going to be big change. However, AI will be an enabler. And I am a strong believer of this. I think understanding its capabilities, but knowing how to use it to help drive efficiencies, help alleviate certain pressures, like note-taking, that in itself can be helpful. Calculations in terms of bringing things together, you have to check them, but it can just speed up and enable the process. So I think we're still learning. I think no one's going out saying that they know it all. There's obviously a lot of bright people who shared their experiences and certain tools to potentially use. But I think it's not a fear thing. And I think embracing it is really important. I think, yeah, it's only going to help you if you're going to start at least putting some level of your mindset to sort of think, okay, how can I grapple and understand it? I think it's important.
Yeah, my experience of it has been that it's for the work that was not going to get done without it so far in my daily. Like, we have a a show and tell on a Friday with the entire team. And normally I just put a slide up saying, welcome to whatever Friday the 13th. But now I can go to AI and say, okay, today Deepak's going to present on this. Mesh is going to present on this. And then it can do like a movie poster for me, you know, like, and I'll put that up instead and say a show and tell with a movie poster. These are the stars of the show today. So obviously I was never going to go and hire a designer to do that every Friday, but it's a fun thing. Doesn't need to be client facing. It's a fun thing to get things done. And these extra things that were just work that was not going to get done, but can add an extra quality or an extra layer on top of things. That's what I've seen for it so far. Okay, so let's get into the case study that we're talking about, because I think this is quite interesting. You have a lot of experience, a lot of background, and more recently setting up your own firm in the last year or so. And it's very often a lot of people are just before that stage, or they've been, you know, or maybe along the same stage. And it's very interesting to hear sort of reports from the road of what it's actually like. So you've taken the first step. Congratulations. So maybe you could just set the scene about this case study we're going to discuss today. What was happening before you came along, and how did you get involved?
No, great question. And I appreciate you sort of inviting me to just share my experience. So I'm going to be honest, it's not been easy stepping out of something that I've been doing for 20 years in corporate and enjoying that lifestyle. Consistent income is always helpful, right? So stepping out of that to a lot of unknown and having to do everything. And when I mean everything, there's nothing set up when you start. So I have to think of invoicing, but not just invoicing, chasing that invoice to get the money in. That in itself is it can be time consuming if you don't have the processes or people. And usually you don't have many people when you start.
People, when you mean people, you mean you.
Exactly, me. So I'm doing that. I'm obviously managing the accounts. Obviously I'm looking for work, you know, and so it's a lot. And then you're delivering for the client. And so, yeah, I was kind of fortunate. It was almost like a right place, right time. I was invited to a launch event of a magazine, and at this magazine event, I knew the person who invited me, and I knew a couple of people in the room, and I went up to someone who was a finance broker, and we had been talking about how we could potentially do business together, and I said, look, you mentioned to me that you could introduce me to someone, and he was like, there he is. So we're in the room together, and literally he joined the dots for us. And that was fantastic. And so that's where the relationship began. And initially he had someone in finance. He had a finance person in role. And then he had also an agency, like a fractional finance agency, but he was not getting results. And I think he was getting quite frustrated. He knew that his business was struggling financially in terms of cash flow. He didn't have visibility really on why things were not performing. The business was seven figures in terms of revenue, but it seems like they were hemorrhaging a lot of costs. And so what I did initially was did an audit on the practice. I sat in a meeting, I asked a couple of questions to sort of find out what's going on. You've been around for 3-4 months, you know, I believe you are finance outfit. But clearly not. They were not.
A quick question there on the audit. Do you have a checklist, or are you just working from your experience? What are the highlights you want to hit on in that sort of audit?
Yeah, no, great question. And so it was a couple of, I didn't have a checklist. I sat down in a meeting and just heard what they were advising to the business owner. And I just felt it wasn't making sense, because the first thing I just asked, where is the P&L? And they showed the P&L, and we said, okay, so what have you done from the time you joined to where you are? And nothing had moved, literally. And I thinking, well, that P&L came from zero. That's a click of a button.
So something was fishy is what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. It's like you're there for 3 months and that's all you've done. Like, okay. So I went away, and obviously the business owner didn't quite understand the capabilities of Xero. And so I just explained to him, you can do this with a couple of clicks of a button. The fact that that's all they produce for you and nothing else, let me take this on. And so it was a hard decision. We had to move quite quickly to wind down that contract and bring me in. But I knew my hands were up against it, because I started to spend a lot of hours just trawling through his history, his data, understanding the different account lines, breaking down and creating business units within Xero, so I can get clarity over the various costs within the business.
What sort of industry was this? How did you decide how to break that up into what departments? Just give us a bit of texture on the business.
It was a restaurant business and they had multi-sites. So they had a couple of sites. They did delivery, they did events, and they had one site. And then they had a central kitchen. So they had four key areas or divisions. And so I understood that. And having a lump together P&L wasn't good enough. I thought we needed to start separating that out so that I can identify what was driving revenues, what was driving costs, and basically deep diving into the business, which was the first thing I did. The first couple of days I did that, and I worked with his in-house finance individual, who was a friend from school. He was literally a friend from school, and he said, look, come in. But that individual was not qualified, unfortunately, and it was a bit too much for him. So I came in, but I was coaching him, and really good guy. You know, I think he's got a really good future, but it was probably just too much for him. So he was helpful because he understood the business as well. He gave me insights into what terms we had with certain suppliers and payment days and stuff. So he was very helpful.
Now you're talking my language, supplier management, my favorite topic. There was a big challenge here, right, in the background. Like there was a reason that he wanted to bring you in the first place. And there was, aside from the day-to-day, something bigger was happening. Tell us a bit about that.
So the biggest thing that was happening, there were actually quite a few things. You know, it was the people and then obviously the processes and then also the structuring of their debts. I found out quite quickly what level, looked at their debt book, looked at what sort of loans they had taken out. And I realized we had to restructure his debt book straight away, look for better terms. And also, he had no idea about equity. I said, look, is there a way that we may be able to raise some equity instead of leveraging too much debt within the business to sort of take away the financial cost pressures that he was facing? So that was one thing. It was just restructuring his debt and explaining to him not all money is good money. You need to understand the terms that you're signing up to. Are they long? Are the interest rates on them? The whole covenants that you agree to. So I helped him out of the debt. That was one, because that gave us a little bit of breathing space.
So the debt payment sounds like it was a problem. So they had debts at a high interest rate. So when you're saying equity, you mean rather than having to pay someone interest, using that equity is another way of saying getting investment, right? And people would take a piece of the business. So then you don't have that debt payment anymore. Frees up the cash flow. And in a restaurant business, you're talking about, what, 10, 15% margins, net margins at the end of the day, maybe lower?
Yeah, so for him, it was really low. We're talking below 10%.
Right. So debt payment could have been maybe, I don't know, 10, 15, 20% of the net profits. So he didn't realize what was going on. Okay. That's interesting. So you were able to give him that advice. That makes sense. So did that set you down a path of fundraising?
Yeah. So went through a path of fundraising to find out who might be able to give investments, depart some of their cash and take a stake within the business at a certain percentage. And we were successful. You know, we didn't need to raise huge. We weren't looking to expand. It was just more to alleviate. And I was telling him stabilization is key.
And what was the pitch to the investor there? So they're not going to get a dividend by the sounds of it. So was the intention was that they were going to go for an exit, or why would an investor put the money into this?
So if they would get a dividend eventually. It was mainly pitching to them to understand, and this is really important because this is where finance and being commercially driven as a finance leader is quite key, because I understood the importance of the brand of what they're doing. They have a great community. A lot of people know what they're doing on Instagram and TikTok. It's a new generation, so they're serving a new generation of clientele and restaurateurs, people buy food. And so it isn't a normal sit-down restaurant. It was buy quickly, you know, over a kiosk, you buy quick and you go, grab and go.
Quick service restaurant, that's what I've heard these days. We don't call them fast food anymore.
Yeah, fast food. And so because of that, I understood that they've got a good following. Like a really, they're a good brand. And not only that, the events that they've been invited to, they're dealing with corporates. They work with the PwCs, the EYs, the big fours. They operate in that space in terms of serve at events for them, and they operate at carnivals. So they're really known in the community. So it would be a shame to sort of just let it all go. So the person who was coming in actually was friend and family. We were able to find out that actually they had a good range of people around them that would understand what they've been doing, because it was a family business and they were happy to keep the company going, or at least reduce the stress on the company, at a hope that there's a projection going forward. Because another thing that I was working on is that if we can stabilize the business, we can then start growing and we can then hopefully set up more sites. That's where we are now. We're now opening more sites. We've stabilized the business. And so the person who has come in actually might have a good stake later on down the line. It's a long-term investment. They can't look to try and get something out now. They might have to sit around maybe 5 years, but in 5 years, if they do well, they could potentially exit.
Okay, really cool. I mean, I hadn't thought about that. I mean, you think about your customers funding your business, but I never thought it that directly. Okay, they're going to actually invest in your business. And from their point of view, was they wanted to keep you going, is personal relationships, I guess, and giving them the opportunity makes me wonder now if I wanted to raise the money, well, maybe I should go to my customers and see who wants to be part of our story, you know? Maybe I should start serving better food. I don't know. But okay, that's a really cool story. And obviously he would, you know, that just was never going to happen without a fractional CFO like yourself.
And to be honest, he's given me such glowing reports. He said to me, he didn't quite understand what a fractional CFO was. When I came on board, he really saw the quality. He saw how I thought. He saw how I could help him not address the pain, but also help with the growth, stabilization. And I think I didn't get to it, but I also had to take and speak to him about the quality of his people, because he had most of his friends and families involved in the business. And I said that you need to start professionalizing your business. You need to start bringing in the right resources, because that's kind of fundamental to your growth. And so we had to bring in like a kitchen manager. We had to bring in an ops director or ops manager so that they could really work on the scheduling of resources that they were having, you know, and then also look at like events. Not all events were great events. They were making losses on certain events. So doing some deep diving, why are we going to this event and this event? We're serving, putting in all that time, all those hours, and we're still making a loss. We need to be doing a return on investment assessment on events before we sign up to them. And so these things he had no clue. You know, he wrote me an email and a wonderful WhatsApp chat saying, thank you, you saved my family's business. But more than that, you know, we now have a future that we can now see a potential exit. So it's really rewarding. You know, I have to admit, it's really rewarding, because it was going down, but it's been a great turnaround and a wonderful story.
Yeah, okay. That's a lovely story. I think we'll wrap up that story there. I mean, it's funny. I listen to this guy, John Deloney, on the internet. He's an agony aunt type guy, you know, and every now and then they talk or whatever. And then, you know, halfway through the call, the guy will say, oh, yes, and I transitioned to be a male 3 years ago. And he's like, oh, why didn't you leave with that? That's the important thing, you know, like, and I feel like, wow, you saved this business. And I love the fact that you were able to point out this is something you would not be aware of. Like, so you would not be aware you could restructure that like this. You probably didn't even have the idea that people would invest in this business. And that's a real impact. And then the cash flow has all obviously been opened up. And it sounds like so rather than take that cash flow, he's decided to use that for expansion, which wouldn't have been on the cards before.
Correct. And so now he's got working capital to expand. He's got work because of the restructuring, because of having to bring in the right people as well and let go of some, let's be honest, he had to. He's able now to focus on growing, and he's now got a couple of new sites. He got one. And then there's a few more on the cards. I believe it could be a staple brand in the UK in the coming months and years.
Awesome. I love that story. The power of CFO on your team. It's a brilliant, great example of it. So let me move on now here to yourself and FinOps Squad. So, you know, you have this great case study, great example. What's next for you and your business?
No, fantastic. And again, it's new. We're under 1 year, but the plan is to grow and expand. And so I've been working on my branding, which I think is really key. It's good to be distinct in a very crowded space. My hat is part of the branding. So F, finance, O, operations, S, strategy, FinOps Squad. So I've been working on my branding.
What do I have to do to get one of those?
I've got some. Okay, cool. Black or orange?
Orange my color, yeah.
I'll send you one, James, for sure I will. But yeah, no, so working on my branding, that's something that I've been doing over the summer. And bringing in new talent as well. So I've got a unique offering. So my team, I've got a pool of resources that are offshore. They're based in Africa. Great, talented bunch of guys and girls, all qualified and fantastic. So they can help with the management reporting and preparation. And that helps me. And I'm bringing other people within the team. So yeah, it's scaling and building from, like you said, this case study and a few others that I'm working with, a few other clients that I'm working with at the moment. And our strap line is all about fueling businesses. We know that the heroes of all businesses are the business owners. And we are effectively partners to help you fuel to get there. And we basically do that through financial resilience, operational vision, and strategic acceleration. So those are the three areas that we really focus on. And that's basically, you know, back office support, you know, getting your books really well done, giving you insights so you know what are the key KPIs within your business, and then helping your growth. So looking for funding and looking at your plan and your growth plan and seeing how we can support that.
Okay, awesome. So I love it. So let's start to wrap things up then with my rinky-dink question I ask everyone at the end, which is, who's your business hero and why?
So I have three. So if that's all right. So I have Steve Jobs. Why? Because he was a master of expert collaborator, a community builder, a technologist, but a fantastic business person. We all know him. We all use his products. So what an inspiration. Jay-Z. So I love hip hop. When I grew up, I listened to him a lot, but I know he's an entrepreneur and constantly evolving. So I love the way how he's agile, looking to make things work. And that gives me a lot of buzz. And the last thing is Allen Iverson. So not a lot of people will know about Allen Iverson if you don't play basketball. I grew up playing basketball. Allen Iverson was a disruptor. He changed the NBA, literally. He came in with tattoos and he was a menace. I wouldn't say I'm a menace, but I am a disruptor. And I love the fact that he has that energy. He comes with a great source of energy, a real people's person. And I love Allen Iverson for that.
Okay, I love those examples. They all sound like disruptors to me. Sounds like to me, you want to think differently. Let's steal Jobs' quote. Yeah, very cool. All right. Well, thanks very much. And thank you for listening this far into the podcast. Your listener, congratulations for getting this far. You have a special thing that no one else gets, which is you get to go to procurementexpress.com/partners. Now, what I've done there is put up a webinar. And if you're actually someone who's looking how to put your offer together in terms of how to add value as a fractional CFO, having interviewed dozens at this stage, I've started to see the patterns and the people who are able to capture the most value from their clients, create the most value, and ultimately capture that client value. And I put this into a webinar together with a case study with Ben de la Cretas. Ben works for TechCXO, very successful fractional CFO. And he's done a couple of things to make himself very successful, get business going. And also he uses Procurement Express as part of his tool set. So if you go to procurementexpress.com/partners, you'll be able to get the webinar where you'll learn how to position your fractional CFO business to capture the most value. I've got a four-step formula that's very powerful. And then you'll also get the case study of Ben and how he uses Procurement Express to deliver value for his customers. So congratulations, listener. You managed to qualify for that, having listened this far. And yeah, Leonard, this has been a really great episode. I love the story. I love the fact that it really is a great example of what a fractional CFO can do for you over and above the reporting. You took that extra step, making real difference in that business's lives. And that would not have happened without you. I think that's the most exciting thing about being in business, doing things that wouldn't happen without you. And thanks very much for being on the show.
Thank you, James. Thanks for inviting me.